states, obviously including Nebraska, and it shows you what the relative reliance on the tax is, what the breadth of the tax is in each of the states, and what the statutory tax rate is in those states. This is based on census data, and it's corrected census data because the census data for fiscal years 2010, 2011, 2012 have Nebraska wrong. They miscategorized the motor vehicle sales tax, so that's a little messed up. I worked with Bill Locke to get the correct Nebraska number for that. So the number for Nebraska that you'll see here isn't quite like other census numbers for Nebraska. Okay, so I'm going to talk about retail sales tax policy and structure. Only indirectly, I guess, will I talk specifically about the state of Nebraska. The first thing to understand is what tax policy is. The objective of tax policy is to get your revenue system to behave like a pickpocket and not like a mugger. Okay? Pickpockets and muggers do exactly the same thing. They take money. But the mugger leaves the victim lying beaten and battered. And that's what your tax system wants to do. It wants the money. You want the money, but you want to minimize the collateral damage. So, in an important sense, that's all you need to know about tax policy. And all the objective of tax policy is to get your system to behave like a pickpocket and not like a mugger. That's it. Now, in the process of achieving that objective, we talk about the BBLR principle. BBLR means broad-based low rate. And there's three steps to the BBLR design structure. One is start with a sensible measure of capacity, a sensible way of philosophically dividing the tax burden across taxpayers. The second is once you've got that general conception of capacity, define it for the tax system in the broadest logical legal definition. And then finally, apply the tax rate, the statutory tax rate, that is absolutely as low as is feasible. That those set of steps will get you to the tax policy, the tax structure that meets your basic policy objective. If the base is too broad or too narrow, you're going to have problems for economic efficiency, you're going to create economic distortion, you're going to create administrative compliance problems, and potentially problems with equity. You have problems if it's too broad, you have problems if it's too narrow. Okay, now, here's really the beginning point for thinking about sales tax, retail sales tax policy. That's the thing that is the Caldor principle. It's the basic philosophy behind levying a general consumption tax. And that is, as I have quoted here, each individual performs the business of revealing their ability to pay for himself when, in the light of all his present circumstances and future future prospects, he decides on the scale of his personal living expenses. Thus, a tax based on actual spending rates each individual's spending capacity according to the capacity that he applies to himself. The individual taxpayer knows his circumstances, knows his future prospects, and spends accordingly. And in many circumstances, spending gives you a better idea of fundamental economic capacity of an individual than does the individual's income. Give you an example. Back a long, long, long time ago, I was an assistant professor of economics at West Virginia University. And my salary was $12,000 a year, which moving from being a graduate student to getting that salary, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. Okay. The Secretary of State of West Virginia, as it turns out, had a salary of $12,000 a year, exactly the same. Okay? As far as the income measure is concerned, we were the same. Okay? Give you another extra piece of detail. The Secretary of State of West Virginia at that time was named John D. Rockefeller IV. Yes, that Rockefeller family. Okay? His wife was the daughter of the former chairman of Bell and Howell back at that time, which was a very prosperous corporation. Our income, $12,000, the same. But I bet his spending was a lot different from mine. Okay? Because his spending was based on his past advantages and future prospects that his income just didn't quite capture. So, because consumption is a self-definition of economic capacity, it can capture elements of economic capacity that other measures can't grasp. Now, notice that this relies on the private market. Okay, this is a private market indication of capacity. It's not a bureaucratic judgment of what counts as income. It's self-determined. It's determined by the individual. And it's all-encompassing. It grasps all. So that's why we think that a tax driven by general household consumption is a strong competitor for financing general government operations. The consumption base has the advantages of being a reasonable capacity measure. It's less harmful for economic growth than is the income base, and it doesn't have the kind of saving bias that that some income taxes, as they're structured, have. The retail sales tax, and I stress retail sales tax because there are a variety of general sales taxes. The retail sales tax is the one we want to talk about because that's the American approximation of the general consumption tax. It's not a tax. It's not a proxy for an income tax. You want a tax that distributes burden according to household income, or you need to adopt an income tax, not a retail sales tax. It's not a selective excise tax. It's not designed to capture compensation for external costs to society, like a cigarette tax or an alcoholic beverage tax. It's not a proxy charge, like a motor fuel tax is. It's not a gross receipts tax or a turnover tax. There's some real disadvantages of that sort of tax we'll talk about in a minute. It's not a user charge. It's not charging for any particular government services. But unfortunately, at the same time, the way it's structured,
both states and
the United States. It's not too good. It's a consumption tax. It's as close as we come to that ideal of a general consumption tax, but it isn't. If it were to be a general consumption tax, then we would tax every household consumption purchase, and we would exempt every business purchase. Now, what you want to do with the tax is to tax the last change in the supply chain, the last exchange in the production distribution chain, because that's the exchange that gets goods and services to the household. And if you tax all of those last exchanges, then you get the general consumption tax idea. I'm going to talk specifically about two issues in retail sales tax structure. I can talk about a bunch more, but I think these two are the ones that are most pertinent for your discussions now. The first one is the treatment of business purchases. What do you do with business purchases in a retail sales tax? Well, the test is not whether a particular item is finished. The test is whether it's the last exchange in the supply chain. The test is whether the purchase is of an input that's used for business purposes, or whether it's the purchase of something for household consumption. The way we do the division in most retail sales taxes is through use of a thing called a suspension certificate. Basically, it's used to turn off the application of the sales tax when the business makes a purchase. I think in Nebraska, that's Form 13. That's the magic form. The suspension certificate is what we use in retail sales taxes to take business purchases out of the system. One of the other forms of sales tax, another form of general consumption taxation, is a value-added tax used widely throughout Europe, Canada, Mexico, and basically the rule is if you regularly hear of a country, they have a value-added tax. They remove the business purchases from the tax base using a slightly different approach. And in fact, it's that different approach that distinguishes between a retail sales tax and a value-added tax. I can explain that later if you're interested. It's not really directly relevant to what we're talking about now. So the test isn't whether a good is finished or not. The test is whether or not a business is purchasing it as an input to its operations. Lots of times it's an easy test. For instance, here's an easy test. This is a Caterpillar 6030B excavator. Okay? It's a finished product. Okay? But that's not the important part of the sales tax. The important part is this is almost certainly never going to be bought by a household. Okay? It's always going to be bought by a business. So this is an easy exemption. Has a household ever bought a Caterpillar 6030B excavator for household use? I don't think so. Lots of times this is easy. An example, possibly when it might not be so easy, harder with this. This is a, I guess it's an F-150 pickup truck. And here, it's just as finished a product as the picture before. And it does have business use, but not always. Here it's tougher. Sometimes Ford F-150 is being purchased for business use. Sometimes being purchased by a household because people like trucks. This is harder, and I won't pretend that it's an easy call. That's why you have exemption certificates. That's what the exemption certificate process is about. And ultimately, I guess that's why you have auditors. But the point is, you want to tax household purchases. You want to exempt business purchases. And whether or not the thing being purchased is quote unquote finished in some way, shape, or form really is kind of irrelevant. It just doesn't matter. That's not the test if you're trying to get a general exemption tax. Now, looking the problem if you tax business purchases is the tax becomes part of business cost, and business cost gets reflected in prices charged. And final purchasers, the household, pays a tax on the final purchase price, but also pays embedded tax from earlier stages in the production, distribution, or supply chain. That's the pyramiding problem. I'll talk about that in some detail. The idea of pyramiding, the problem of pyramiding, is when one tax applies multiple times in a supply chain, causing a higher tax rate on the consumer, a tax rate that is considerably higher than the advertised or statutory tax rate. Now, looking at the reality of state retail sales taxation, and I know Nebraska has fixed some of these issues, but not all. I'm talking generically about sales taxes around the United States. If you look at the things that businesses buy, they buy a product for resale. They buy inventory, in other words. Other kinds of businesses buy component parts that they're going to use to assemble something that they will resell. And that kind of business purchase is excluded from sales tax in almost all places. There are another category of business purchases that get excluded from taxation, usually, but far from always. And that's equipment and machinery that's used on the production line. And that's something that you've gone a long way to resolving in your tax. But other states haven't gone as far as you have. Some business purchases get excluded from taxation sometimes. And in the sometimes category, we've got fuels that are being used by the business, energy that's being used by the business, consumables, things like napkins at McDonald's and lubricants and lubricating oils and things like that, that sometimes get excluded. And then there's some other business purchases that almost never get removed from taxation. And this is the range of office and retail fixtures, for example. So we've got some business purchases that are almost always excluded from taxation, and some others that are almost never excluded from taxation. And want to avoid the problems of pyramiding and to get to the objective of a general tax on consumption spending, you need to get all of them out. Now, here's why. Let me try to explain pyramiding. And I'm going to start with what I refer to as a static analysis of pyramiding, and that's in your handout, Exhibit 1. Okay? We've got here a supply chain, an appliance manufacturer, an appliance retailer, and a household consumer. Okay? On the leftmost column, we've got sales being made. And on the rows, we're talking about sales by. And we're not looking at everything. The appliance manufacturer, and we're going to start with a hypothetical statutory tax rate of 5.5%. I think we're familiar with some states that use that rate. We have a computer manufacturer who sells computers to the appliance manufacturer. Okay? And following the practice of lots and lots of states, whether that sale of the computer is subject to sales tax depends on whether it's the computer is being used in the production line or whether it's being used in administration. Okay? If it's used in the production line, there's a tendency for the purchase to be exempt. If the computer is going to be used in administration, it's taxable. Okay, so we're going to follow that tax structure here, so that 5.5% of $150,000 generates a retail sales tax of $8,250. Okay, the appliance. Manufacturer makes sales to an appliance retailer. Okay? The computer manufacturer also makes sales to the appliance retailer. The appliance retailer is going to use those computers in administration. Okay? It's not being used in direct production, subject to the sales tax. So $10,000 of computers being bought by the appliance retailer generates $550 of sales tax liability. Okay? The appliance manufacturer sells appliances to the appliance manufacturer for $800,000. Okay? That's a sale of inventory, so it's not subject to the sales tax. It doesn't generate any revenue. The appliance retailer then sells the appliances to households for $1 million. Okay? Retail sales tax applies. 5.5% of $1 million is $55,000. Money to the bank for the state. All right, now, this is what the pyramiding has done. We said that the regional sales tax rate is 5.5%. Okay? The amount of purchases by customers of appliances is $1 million. $1 million times 5.5% is $55,000. How much sales tax has the state collected in this simple supply chain example? Well, it's collected $8,250 from the purchases by the appliance manufacturer. It's collected $550 from the appliance retailer on purchases of computers. And it's collected $55,000 from households So the sum total of sales tax generated is $63,800. Okay? The 5.5% sales tax rate has generated an effective sales tax on the $1 million of appliances being sold of 6.38%. Okay? That's the bare bones static of a pyramid. Okay? Exhibit 2 takes it to the next level of complexity. I'm going to stop here and see if there's a question before I get fancy. All right. Exhibit 2 is sales tax pyramid taken to the next level. This is a dynamic analysis that is more likely to be reflecting how the responses actually work. We have an appliance we've got the total cost operations here of the appliance manufacturer, the distributor, and the retailer. The appliance manufacturer buys inputs and builds a product. Okay? So it buys component parts, not taxed. It buys production line equipment, not taxed. It buys fixtures, fuel, and electricity not used in the production process and other sorts of things. That's taxed. Okay? So the cost element for this piece of its operations is $30,000 plus 5.5% sales tax. Okay, so that means that as far as its accounts are concerned, its cost of purchasing these things is $31,650. It also incurs labor costs, rent, interest, not taxed. It also has a profit, not taxed by the sales tax. The sales by the manufacturer, okay? That's the sum of cost of component parts, cost of production line equipment, cost of fixtures, fuel, etc. Labor, rent, interest, and profit with the sales tax component is $236,650. Okay? The sales tax that's paid by the manufacturer is this $1,650 when it bought the fixtures, fuel, and so on. Distributor buys the product from the manufacturer. Okay, that's the inventory purchased by the manufacturer. Because it's inventory, it's not subject to sales tax. So the inventory cost is $236,650. In order to operate, it also has to buy fixtures, fuel, computers, electricity, and so on. Those are taxed under the sales tax. So that cost component is the $80,000 plus the 5.5% sales tax. It also incurs labor cost, rent cost, interest cost, profits, so that the sales by the distributor are the sum of those elements.